It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And then she said, "That's not my pineapple." I think I mentioned that a couple weeks ago.
You did.
I should watch that movie again.
Which movie is that?
Fargo.
Again?
Fargo. At least I think it's Fargo. Maybe it's not Fargo. It's one of those movies that's in the Midwest in winter. Surprising number of those.
I guess.
Yeah. I think we used all our A material in that first hour.
Yep. Just go back and listen to that. Don't.
What should I call that episode? I mean, by now they'll know what I called it, but
oh.
I think it's going to be something involving the word quantize.
quantize,
probably quantize my hat. Whenever I can't come up with a noun, I just stick hat on there.
Quantized hat.
Quantized hat. Is quantized the past tense of quantize?
I don't know.
I was so shocked by quantize that I'm like, I don't trust any of the conjugation.
Like I said, I usually hear it in the context of they're doing an operation on some equations. They quantize.
Can one eventually will have been quantized?
I suppose. If you're talking about the operation on the equation, you quantize it so you could you quantized it yesterday.
Is going to have been quantizing?
I don't know.
The gerund form of quantize. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's quantized for your protection.
No, quantized for your pleasure.
Whoa!
That's what you should have said.
I feel like you got chocolate in my peanut butter there. I feel like we mixed up our jokes.
I think we did.
Although, to be honest, neither of those is two in bacteria.
Yeah.
Bacteria.
Yeah, right.
Look, it's bacteria. You might not see them, but they're there. Without fail now, I just consider that the song William's swimming pool song.
Clean, clean, then clean again. Yep. I think I saw recently someone said, you know, chlorine in your pool, maybe I shouldn't tell you this.
Is that if you smell it, it's because it's been working?
No, if you smell it, it's because there's pee in it.
Yeah, yeah. No, what happens is chlorine works to break down, it's not just pee, other things.
Like, whatever, okay.
Feces could also be stuff like that, but it's the breaking down of those things that causes the scent to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So the stronger chlorine smell doesn't mean it's cleaner or even that it has more chlorine. It means that it had more stuff in it that the chlorine had to break down.
Right, right, right.
So it's
That's
not
gross.
A good smell.
That's
yeah,
gross.
I think I learned that on Adam Ruins Everything.
And whenever I go into a hotel, I always smell the pool. So it's like, yeah, let's
but,
go
I mean,
swimming.
They do, yeah, no, it's... Yeah, and there's a lot of things where I'm like, people are weird about pools, and then I'm like, public pools. Public pools are different.
Yeah,
and most
gotta,
of my life I have not swam in
yeah,
public
you've got a,
pools.
You've got your own pool, and that's cool. And
it's full of my urine.
That's,
which, yeah,
that's
you know,
different.
So I think I've mentioned this before, and I don't understand it. Addie, if I have chlorine, like if I've been handling the chlorine tablets...
Mm-hmm.
He loves it to the degree that he tries to eat my fingers.
Really?
He reacts to it very similarly to the way he reacts and other cats react to catnip.
That's interesting.
To the degree that now sometimes if I have a swim, I'll purposely like open the floater and take out the things and just like rub the tablet on my hand a little bit
mm-hmm.
before I come back in and then and he goes nuts.
Really?
Yeah. He's none of the other cats, but something about that the chlorine really drives him crazy.
Interesting.
He loves it. Also, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 389.
You're slow on that. Even I knew what it was. As part two, what this means is if you're just joining us for the first time, stop it. Go back to 388. That's the beginning of this two-parter.
Yep.
We left it on a cliffhanger. I mean, now you know William's still alive, but go back and try and seem surprised. That one also explains the show. So go find that out.
So what were the two things that you didn't talk about last week that you wanted to talk about this week?
I'll get to them.
You'll get to them.
I have never been a huge fan of Bob Newhart.
Okay.
I'm never, like, anti him.
Okay.
But I've never really gotten why he's considered such a comedy great. He can do a good sort of monologue. He has an amusing sort of awkwardness about him, which can be funny in and of itself. But there is one exception, one of his classic bits, and I didn't realize it was classic bit, because he guest starred on an episode of Mad TV.
Oh.
In which he did a bit, and it was only years later that I found out this is just a bit he does, which is a bit where he basically plays a therapist who tries to help cure you of problems by just telling you to stop it. So you go to him, and it's like, I can't quit smoking. I'm smoking all the time, and I've tried the patch, and I just can't. I keep going back to it. And he's like, is he smoking? He's like, yeah, and you don't want to anymore. It's like, yeah. He's like, then stop it! And they're like, it's not that easy. Like, he's like, no, just stop it. He's like, but it's really an addiction, and I try. And he's like, stop it. And that's the whole bit. And it cracks me up. And I very much believe it cracks me up because of how he does it.
Probably, yeah.
So I got to give him credit for that. And I should say, I don't find him unfunny the rest of the time. It's just he is held up as one of the greats. And I'm always a little like, why? I mean, he's fine. He's definitely an accomplished comedian.
Yeah, I used to like
but
him.
But I don't put him up there with, like, you know, George Carlin, Joan Rivers.
Sure. I used to like him quite a bit. He was pretty famous for a long time for bits where he was on the phone.
Yeah. Which got his mannerisms across pretty well. Yeah, and that's the thing, because people think of Newhart as like, oh yeah, he had that show, and before then he had that other show. No, he had a long time before that. Sure. He was just a comedian who would show up on, you know, Ed Sullivan and things like that. Sure. Laughing, I'm sure he was there.
Also, I think a big thing of his was the way his facial expressions when he responded to things. He was usually the straight man.
He really was.
And people liked him, the way he did that.
As a kid, you don't like the straight man when you're a kid. And I think that's some of it. Because me watching a little bit of the Bob Newhart show, but also I was totally at the age that I watched a lot of Newhart.
Yeah.
And in fact, for many years as a kid, I thought it was literally supposed to be the same guy.
Oh.
I thought it was him, like, later in life kind of thing. Mm. He was the least funny thing about it. Like, I loved Julie Duffy. I loved Peter Scolari. I loved Tom
Poston.
Poston was, yeah. I thought they were all hilarious. And, of course, Daryl.
Larry, Daryl, and Daryl.
Loved that. He was boring to me. And he was also the guy that also got mad at all the shenanigans. I didn't like that either. But nowadays, I appreciate him a little more. And I love that particular bit.
He's in Cold Turkey, a film that was made in Iowa.
Oh.
And he's a bad guy.
Ooh, that's
he's pretty
odd.
He's pretty good.
Did you ever see a movie called Iowa?
I think I have seen a movie called Iowa, yeah.
Have you seen a movie called Iowa that was about meth?
I believe that is what it was about.
Yep.
The movie I saw.
You saw that? Did you see that just because it was called Iowa?
Probably.
It was bad, wasn't it?
My recollection is that it was bad, yeah.
Yeah, I think you might have been the only person who saw it. I remember when it came out, and This would have been late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay, I mean, I saw it more recent than that. But.
Well, the thing is, meth became a thing. And Iowa became a big meth place.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually literally lived through that, in that I knew a bunch of meth addicts and people who were selling it and stuff like that in small town Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of at the time where it stopped being as big of a thing in Iowa was about the time somebody decided to make a movie about it.
Mm.
And, you know, my sensibilities have changed over the years, and now I just laugh at the very concept of ever watching a movie like that. But it looked fucked up enough at the time that I remember even then being like, I don't think I want to see this. Because it was clearly meant to be this most sensationalized, you know. Like when they make shitty movies now about the drug cartels in Mexico that are just all about the guns and the violence. And all.
Mm-hmm.
This was clearly that, but it was set in Iowa. And everybody looked like they had raided the costumes from Clockwork Orange or some shit. Like, it had this weird steampunk fashion aesthetic that just made no sense.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
It was clearly, well, on the posters in the trailer. Like, there were guys with top hats and shit like that, if memory serves. And it was clearly made by people who had never had anything to do with Iowa, so. But, yeah. I don't know. Something recently reminded me of that. I think I was talking with somebody about meth recently. I read a thing that was talking about really fucked up anti-drug PSAs from, like, the 90s.
Yeah.
And it showed me someone, I was like, whoa, those are fucked up. And then it showed me one that I was like, I remember that one. And that one was incredibly effective. Because I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that. Because of that. And it was this one that had this fake song, this fake jingle about meth. Oh, meth. Ooh, meth. And the whole commercial was things like, I don't sleep and I don't eat, but I've got the cleanest house on the street. And you see this woman who's like been picking out her hair and stuff, and she's like obsessively cleaning her shower with a toothbrush and stuff like this while they're singing this in the background. It was fucked up. And they're like, this is terrible. And I'm like, no, this is one of the few anti-drug PSAs that like hit home for me. I was like, you are right. I do not want to do that. Like all the other shit with the frying pan and or just like, you know, where you tell a random story and then somebody dies at the end and you're like, that's because they were doing pot. And you're like, what? Mm. No. Like, but that one, I was like, I guess it was pretty messed up. It did what it was supposed to do. And the thing is, with a lot of them, I now know they're bullshit.
Yeah.
But that one, I'm like, no, I still feel like that's what meth does to you. So, like, I'm fine with that one. We didn't talk, other than the State Fair, did you have any fun stuff happen last week?
It seems like we've had a lot of movies come through the house and that I forget about. Like, I...
Wrinkle in Time.
Like, yeah, I'd forgotten completely to bring that up last time until later. But, you know, I know there are things that if I brought them up, you either have seen them or you'd be curious what I thought of it, but I just don't remember. Well, most of them because they don't really impress me that much. You know, we watch it and it's like, it's okay, and then we move on.
Got the moves, but have you got the touch?
We did finish Detroit.
Being Human.
I don't know if she's going to play it again. Right, because you'd play it again to see if you'd make different choices.
Yeah, it feels like it might be too convoluted to, like, I mean, you're not going to be able to get all of it, I wouldn't think, because it would be too confusing.
Well, right, and it's not like, you know, it's not like Dragon Age, say, where, oh, I'm playing a whole different class, so I'm going to have...
Or you make this change, like
yeah.
You still know the major plot points.
Yeah, so if you play it again... And a choice comes up, and you remember what you chose last time, there's not going to be anything, like, fun about choosing something different.
It's not like, oh, there'll be a totally different mission or something.
Or you'll meet somebody completely different, or your dialogue options are going to be completely... No,
I feel like it was not meant for replaying in that way.
Well, if they thought that it would be, I don't think it is. I mean, she could play it again, and maybe it would be interesting, but it's... nothing's telling her, yeah, I have to play this again to see what happens.
Maybe the answer is then play it, you know, in a few years or something.
Possibly, But, I mean, for one playthrough, it was good. It wasn't very long. There's probably one thing that happened that she wished hadn't happened, but does it make her want to play the whole game again to see if she can make it not happen? No.
See, yeah, I had a couple of those in Mass Effect Andromeda where I was like, shit. But I was like, no, that was there. I cheated the once. I talked about how I cheated the once. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad. I could not have coped with that decision. Other ones, I was just like, no, that's fair. That's what that character would have done.
Yeah, well, this game had a problem similar to the Mass Effect, for my wife anyway. When she plays things like Mass Effect, she often she'll pick one of the options, and she's often surprised by what the person actually says. Like,
yeah, oh, it's like, that's not what I picked.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going
to
say that.
For a lot of mine in Andromeda, it was quick time things, where it's like, here's your chance to hit a trigger or not.
Yeah.
Those were the ones that I wasn't sure. And the ones where I actually could make a decision and, like, I had, like, there wasn't a time frame going or whatever.
But this was, there were a few times where she'd pick something and she didn't think that's what the person was going to say.
I do not consent to your agreement, and you select that, and they're like, fuck you!
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no.
No, that's not what I wanted the person to say.
I definitely did not hit the fuck you button. Although I feel like that got better later. I feel like Andromeda was less bad about that than, like, the first Mass Effect. Because there were some in the very first, where I was just like, that is almost the opposite.
Yeah,
of what
and
I said.
And Dragon Age was really bad about it too.
Yeah, I think they improved as time went on.
But in this game had just not very many, but just a few where you choose something and it didn't seem, it wasn't what you thought it was going to be.
That was not a proper summation of what happened.
But I mean, I recommend it. I think people would have fun playing it.
I think I'll definitely hit it up at some point. I'm really hoping I'm going to write and not play anything after I finish Horizon.
Yeah, I hope you do.
Me too, as I just said. All right, so I saw a movie. Now, full disclosure, I liked this movie a lot.
Mm.
It is a very low-budget movie. It is not a spectacular quality of film. It is entirely possible that at least some of my enjoyment of it was due to incredibly low expectations.
Yeah.
So other people may see it and say, why was he so excited? But I liked it. The movie is called Witch Hunt. And I feel I should specify it is a single hyphenated word, witch-hunt. The reason I feel I should specify is because if you don't do that, you can't even fucking find it on IMDb.
Mm.
I had to eventually get one act, because I wanted to look up who the actors were, because some of them looked familiar and stuff like that. I think I finally found out the one who looked most familiar had been on Adam Ruined Everything, and earlier than that had been on College Humor videos, and that's why I knew her. But, so I finally had to find one actress's name, and then I could go from there. And I'm like, oh, it's Witch-Hunt. Right. There's a lot of movies called Witch Hunt. There should be a moratorium on certain titlings of things, on movies and in songs, songs especially. There need to be no more songs whose titles are Closer, Kiss, I Love You is right out. You can't have any more songs called that. There's 12 songs with that same title. Closer is one of the surprising ones for me. Hmm. There are 1,000 songs whose title is Closer. It's really annoying. Anyway, back to my point. Witch Hunt. It's a movie from 2017. It's a good movie, I thought. Here's the basic movie. A woman and her relatively new friend. A woman is planning a birthday party for one of her childhood friends.
Okay.
She has invited this new friend of hers primarily because they're having it at the new friend's house, because the new friend has a nice house. And two other friends that are also childhood friends. So it's a group of four childhood friends and then this new friend. And they have a birthday party.
Okay.
In the birthday party, they give the birthday girl a present that is a game that she has heard of and really wanted to play, and it's called Witch Hunt.
Hyphenated.
I don't know if it was on the thing. I'm not sure about that. You might have just poked a hole in their whole plot. It is a card game. It is remarkably similar to Werewolf that I made you play and applied, and Mafia, which is another version of Werewolf.
Okay.
And what I really like about this is all of the rules are specified in the movie, and the entirety of the game is 7 cards. So I'm like, I could make this. We could just play this game, and I think it would be a good game.
Sure.
Because it's very much the same sort of thing. Everybody gets a card, but there's 7 cards, and there's supposed to be 5 players. And so 2 cards are in the middle. And everybody closes their eyes, and then you have different things you can do. Like, if your card was whatever, you get to open your eyes, and you can do a thing or whatever. And then at the end, you guys have a limited amount of time to decide who is the witch, and you can hang the witch. And if you – and you all vote. And if you vote – if the majority votes and you hang the witch – then you win that round. And if you hang the wrong person or you end up not having a majority and you don't hang anybody, then the witch wins that round. And it's interesting because some of the actions involve moving cards around. So, like, literally, you only look at the card at the beginning before everybody closes their eyes and everything. Mm-hmm. So by the end of the game, you might be the witch and not even know it.
Hmm.
And it looked kind of fun. But anyway, the movie involves them playing this game. But it's a little weird because there's clearly some history and some reasons why some of them are uncomfortable playing this game.
Okay.
But we don't get really explicit about it. And then as the game goes on, you know, weird shit starts to happen.
Mm.
It is a horror movie. It's not a particularly gory horror movie, but it's a horror movie. And it's very much the whole point is the what's happening and, you know, who's behind it, whatever. Two other components with this are there's a sort of outer story about this because the framing device are these two women who are not at the party talking about the party and talking as though they've sort of engineered this game and discussing the different people who are there. And also, there is a running theme through the movie. I don't want to spoil it too much, but it's set in the present day or 2017 or whatever. But there is a thread going through it dealing with the famous satanic panic of the 80s and 90s.
Right.
Where people were, certain individuals were constantly obsessed that there were Satanists out there.
Sure.
And that, you know, there are a couple of famous cases where daycare workers and teachers and stuff were put on trial for doing terrible satanic abusive stuff to children because children were telling the story or in some cases were sort of convinced to tell this kind of story. Mm-hmm. So, and none of it ever proved true, but some terrible shit happened. And, you know, all the stuff with everybody thinking D&D was satanic. And
right, right.
So this has ties to that, and there's some references to that, and that sort of plays a part in it. It was pretty well acted, and it was interesting to me. The sort of end reveal was interesting and well done, but more than that, the bits and pieces along the way, because you get the story bits throughout listening to people talk and stuff. I think I really enjoyed the fact that it was, 100% female cast. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, though, writer-director was a man, and I found that, I was like, I didn't expect that. And so that was just fun from a representational perspective.
Right.
And there was not a lot of, it passes the Bechdel test with flying colors.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of conversation about something somebody used to do in order to get boys' attention or whatever, but like that's it. There are no specific boys talked about. It's not about that kind of thing. And yeah, it's just very interesting to watch, and like you're just slowly, and it's just watching people at a party, and then slowly like weird shit is happening, and you're trying to put together what is it, and then you're like, oh, there's this piece of information you didn't have before. Well, what does that mean? And it sort of becomes a whodunit, but at the same time, is there an it that was done? Yeah. And then slowly you get other pieces. And yeah, I liked it. I recommend it. It's on Amazon. It's called Witch-Hunt.
Witch-Hunt.
And it's like 80 minutes. So, you know.
Sure.
Who are you to reviews? I'm not necessarily specifically recommending it to you, although I don't see why not. I think you might enjoy it too. But there's certain things where I'm like, and this is definitely your thing. But
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
I am casting out a general recommendation for this film. But that includes you.
Okay.
Because, you know, I do have to specify when you're included.
Right.
Okay, the other thing is books. I've been talking about for a while now. And I had to look at it because I keep messing up the author's name. N.K. Jemisin.
Okay.
N.K. Jemisin. Black woman who apparently was born in Iowa City, although not raised here.
Oh.
Who's an author. And I talked about before that I had found her books because after Black Panther, I was like, I want to get more into Afrofuturism.
Sure.
And so I look up Afrofuturism on Wikipedia, and there are a few prominent exemplars in terms of authors for it,
right.
And she's listed as one.
Mm-hmm.
And I click on her, and it says she's particularly known for this particular trilogy, and I click on that, and the first book in the trilogy, the link is purple, meaning I have been to this link before.
Mm.
And I go there, and sure enough, it's a book that at some other point I had looked up and thought, oh, this looks interesting.
Hmm.
And I was like, this is a sign. So I started reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And the trilogy I read is called and I finally finished it. I finished it when I was in Virginia. I finished the third
finished
book.
Finished the trilogy, okay.
Yes. And the trilogy is called The Inheritance Trilogy,
mm-hmm.
which is not to be confused with The Inheritance Series or Saga, which are those Aragon books.
Okay.
Not those. I think those suck. I don't really know, but I think they suck. The movie sucked. And the first book is called The 100,000 Kingdoms. And I'm recommending this to... I wrote a bunch of emails. I didn't send it to you because you don't read fiction. But if you like fantasy, I highly recommend this. If you are interested in Afrofuturism, I feel like this is a good way to go. In general, if you are interested in fantasy that actually deals with issues of race and gender without that being like without that overarching everything so that there's not, you know, a lot of story or whatever. Like, this is good fantasy all on its own. It also has some interesting things to say about race and gender. It is some great world building, some amazing mythology. There is a solid conclusion to the trilogy. I'm not going to say she would never write in this setting again, but I don't know that she plans to, and you don't need to read anymore. Like, it's a satisfying ending.
Mm.
All three books are different characters, but it's all one overarching story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's the first story, and then the next story is from a character, and it's like 10 years later, but it all ties into what happened in the first book. And then the third one is from a different character that actually was a character in both the first and second book, but now it's focused on them. And so it all ties in, but it makes each book kind of feel different. And that's kind of fun.
Hmm.
And I recommend it very much. Like I said, the first book is called The 100,000 Kingdoms. And it's a really cool fantasy. And from what I've been told now, because this was her first books.
Mm.
And people like them, but the ones they love came after this. Mm. So I'm excited to check those out.
Mm, good.
And actually, in the process between me and Jazz and another one in my gaming group, who it turned out had read these and I hadn't realized, she found that we found a bunch of stuff. It was like, if you like her, you'll like this stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's cool. And at the end, in the author's notes at the end of the last book, she pointed out that in this day and age, there's a bajillion freaking authors, you know, every week coming out. There's so many books, and they're so accessible all over the place, and it's really hard to make any prominence, really, and the primary way it happens, even more than back in the day, is word of mouth.
Right.
Is people reading it saying, this is good, you should also read this.
Right.
And I thought this was really good, and I thought you all should read this, so I'm telling you. N.K. Jemisin. There's some other stuff that, and I'm going to read that, but I would say start with this, because, like I said, I love this, and apparently it's the weakest of them. So start with this, and then, like, don't read the other stuff, and then be like, oh, now this one was a little disappointing. Like, start with this, and be like, this is awesome, and then read the other, and be like, whoa! Like, that, I feel like that's a better way to go.
Right.
So, yeah, so check it out, 100,000 Kingdoms by N.K. Jemisin. It's cool, and it's good old-school, real fantasy. Like, there's not science fiction shit going on and stuff in this one. Which, don't get me wrong, I like that. But it's hard to find straight-up fantasy these days.
Yeah.
And I liked it. So, that's all I got to say about that.
That's all I got to say about that.
I've seen other movies, but I don't know if any of them are worth mentioning. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So, when we go to see Ant-Man and the Wasp, trailers before it.
Yeah.
Nothing super surprising at first, but two things came up that were very interesting to me. One was a trailer for the house with the clock in the walls, which I'd seen a trailer before, and I'm like, whatever. It's a kid's book, you know, fine.
Right.
Jack Black, fine, whatever. This one gave a little bit more of the story, and it was a little longer, whatever. I'm kind of interested now.
Really?
Like, depending on what the critics say, I might actually want to go see it.
Hmm. Okay.
It looked kind of cool. Hmm. So I'll have to see. But then the other one is there's a trailer for a movie I had never heard of before called The Hate U Give.
I don't think I saw that.
It is a movie, well, in the trailer, it starts out as it is a movie about a black girl living in a predominantly black community, which unsurprisingly has a bad public school, but her parents have scrimped and saved so she can go to this private school that's there. And there's a little sort of internal monologuing in the trailer about how she acts very sort of white at the school. She sort of hides a lot of aspects of her personality at school so that she fits in better. But then it quickly changes to a thing with her and this guy, and they get pulled over by a cop. And the guy is sort of screwing around with her while he's waiting by the side of the car, because, of course, the cop made him get out of the car. And he moves his hand, and I think he's screwing around with a hairbrush or something, and the cop shoots and kills him. And the community responds.
Right.
And she's at the center of a lot of this. And I need to see this movie. I think everybody should see this movie. I really hope they do it. This is the first time somebody's making this movie. Unfortunately, they're going to make this movie a lot now. But this is the first time somebody's really making a movie about the fact that cops are shooting a lot of unarmed black men and killing them all the fucking time. And yeah, and this is, I'm like, somebody already, and not like a documentary or something, like somebody's making a drama about this thing.
Right.
And God, I hope it's good. But
yeah, I hope so too. I hope it does.
I want to promote it. And, I mean, unless it really fucks it up, I want to promote it, because this is a story that definitely needs to be told a lot right now, because it's finally coming into light. And it's not like this is much of a new thing, but it's finally really coming into light, and it needs all the attention it can get. That's why I have the Black Lives Matter sign in my lawn now, because a lot of us don't live in places where it happened, so we can sort of not think about it.
Yeah.
But it is happening practically on a freaking weekly basis. I'm pretty sure 137 black men have been killed by police this year. I believe I read that statistic just a couple days ago. 13 of which were unarmed. And I mean, regardless of your position on this, whether you're wrong or not, because I definitely think there's a wrong side to be on this, it's impactful because cities are fucking rioting when this happened. Ferguson, Baltimore, hell, at one of these days, Charlottesville real soon. I think Philly had some recently. So it matters, and you should look into it. And if you're not going to look into it through the usual channels, maybe a movie like this will help you look into it a little bit.
Help give you some insights then so you understand.
Perspective.
Yeah, perspective.
Hopefully.
Perspective,
and again, yeah. I've got this all from a movie trailer.
Yeah.
So maybe not, but we'll have to see.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to deal with this idea of her being on a successful track.
Mm-hmm.
But if she chooses to stand up for this, she's risking that.
Yeah, right, right.
Which I'm sure is a real consideration.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
This just made me think of a thing, and I already forgot what it was. Just a second ago that I thought was very important. Say, da-da-da, black man getting shot, da-da-da. Damn it, I lost it. I lost what it was.
Can't help you.
It was important. It was something serious that's been happening. That I wanted to...
Pertaining to race and stuff?
Potentially. That's where a lot of my shit's coming from these days. Oh, I almost had it. Almost had it. crap. I think it was pertaining to race. Something that happened. Something I read. Something... actually happened to me? That doesn't sound right. Things don't happen to me. I'm a white guy.
Can't help you.
God damn it.
Something you saw happen?
No, that doesn't sound right.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, I read terrible shit that happens all the time, but...
Mm.
Oh, god damn. Probably good. Didn't have anything to do with the goddamn president. There's plenty to talk about there, but nothing didn't have to do with that. Aretha Franklin died.
Yes.
That's a...
Today? Was it today?
It was today.
Well, for the people listening, it was a week ago.
Yeah, sorry, it was a week ago. But, and she... I mean, not prolonged, but we'd had a few days where she was seriously ill and we knew this was possible.
See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, some stuff had come up. She'd been in hospice care for a couple days. And
hmm.
God damn, what was it? I can't remember now. Speaking of white privilege, I was watching one of the British panel shows the other day, and one of the guys was talking about how he recently had run the London Marathon.
Yeah.
And they all clapped, and he's like, no, I'm who's supposed to be running it. Early 30s, white, middle-class male. Like, this is what I do. In fact, I'm on the path for the standard posh white guy. It's run the London Marathon, marriage, kids, and then, like, become racist or something. Like, it was a very straight line thing. And he's like, I did it for charity, and they all clapped again. He's like, well, they kind of force you to. And he says, but I should say I did it for type 1 diabetes. And they all clapped again. He's like, I feel I should inform you, I am a type 1 diabetic, so that money's coming back to me. He's like, I'm just going the long way around, but it's, you know, it's coming into me. I feel like I almost know more about British politics these days than I know about American politics because of the panel shows. But it's all, like, 2 years old, British politics.
Yeah.
I recently had to look up who Keith Vaz was because they were making a bunch of jokes about him 1 week.
Well, because I subscribe to a YouTube channel that has an Indian news thing on it, I get a lot of news about Indian politics. I don't remember any of it, but I see the news.
Oh, I remember the thing I wanted to talk about.
What is it?
Didn't happen to me. So... I'm going to be really circumspect here because I didn't get, this is not my story.
Okay.
I did not get permission to tell this story.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to be circumspect, but someone I know had occasion recently to go out with, specifically with a group of, I'm going to say acquaintances, not even, like sort of friends, but not close friends or whatever,
sure,
who all happened to be people not from this country. I believe they were all East Asian.
Okay.
And they were hanging around having drinks, and the friend, who's a white person, eventually came around to sort of talking about how they are not really proud of this country right now, and that kind of scared of what is happening with this country, you know, that don't recognize it kind of thing. And the people they were with, who in addition to being, like I said, East Asian, also have traveled to a lot of other countries. These are like fairly well-off professional people.
Sure.
And they started to talk to her about the really messed up shit in these other countries. Some of which you know about, like, you know, China. There aren't, you know, here we had the stupid white civil rights protest or whatever. You don't have protests in China. You just don't have them.
Sure.
If you tried to do one, you would disappear. Things like that. But even places like the UK, they're like, you would not believe just the racism there. And like, there really are, like, second-class citizens in an almost literal legal way there. Like, so many different countries where it's, like, so much worse. And the person, the white person, who talked to me about it later said that it was interesting on sort of a couple levels. One, obviously, was the whole, you know, clearly I don't know what, like, I'm complaining about this, I'm worried about this, this is nothing.
Right.
Compared to what these people have to go with all the time. And they said it was a little similar to me talking about the thing at the gym and how, like, for a split second I felt what it was like to be marginalized.
Right, right.
For that. And it's the same sort of things, like, suddenly realizing this is nothing compared to what it's like. But also these people sort of expressing the fact that, like, the U.S. is still one of the better ones on this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And of course, the bit I add to this is that a lot of the people in power, both politically and financially, which is very blurred, especially now, but are shit people, bastard people,
yeah,
awful. And there are some that are not in power that are bastard people. But that does not mean the whole country is. And the fact that that fucking white civil rights rally had less than 30 protesters in D.C.
Right.
And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of counter-protesters. And in all of that, there were two arrests. And they were so mundane that we weren't even able to find out which side the person who was arrested on. One was some idiot spit on a cop. I can see why either side might do that, and that's just dumb.
Yeah.
So obviously. And the other, somebody pepper sprayed somebody else, which assholes are going to be assholes.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't Charlottesville all over again. Like, this was, like, but it just sent a clear message. Like, we as a country are not bastard people. And we as a country are much more empowered than most other countries to be able to do something about it.
Yeah.
To be able to state our case,
yeah,
to be able to protest, to be able to speak out, and to be able to vote out.
Sure, right.
So we need to be hopeful.
Yeah, right. We should be hopeful. We should have perspective. And I think there's a couple things we can be proud of in response to something like that. One, that, yeah, we actually are pretty well off compared to the rest of the world. But also that even the little bit, relatively speaking, little bit that we see, we really don't like.
Oh, yeah. There's
that's cool that we don't like it.
The voice complaining about the bad stuff is much bigger.
Yeah, right.
And also, politically, as long as we've got this shitty two-party system, politically, it's all cyclical. Because here's what happens. When either side is in power long enough, everybody's like, huh, I'm not living in a utopia.
Yeah,
clearly,
the
it's the fault of the... And you see it constantly
right,
happen.
Right.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, that's
so
the thing.
So I'm not... As I said before, I totally think it's possible Trump could get a second term. But the point is, it's not like they're just going to get shittier from here.
Yeah, right, right.
Eventually, people are going to be like, you know what? My life is not perfect, and the Republicans have been in power for a while. That's not right.
Let's try Democrats.
Clearly, the Democrats are the ones. And it's happened. I mean,
yeah,
we had
right.
we had Reagan, and then and people like were like, it's not perfect. So then we had Clinton, and everybody's like, Clinton's awesome. And then eventually they're like, no, this isn't working. So then, well, admittedly, then 2000 was fucked up. But then we had Bush for a while, and we're like, that doesn't work. So now we had Obama. But then there's people like, my life's still not perfect with Obama. Okay, then we'll do this. And this is how it happens. And this probably feels similar to people who were living under Nixon and people who were living under the Vietnam War, who were opposed to both of those things.
And a lot of people who did not like Reagan. I mean, because
yeah, oh, yeah,
there
no,
were
my
lots
parents used to freak the
him.
Fuck out about
hated
Reagan.
Him.
It's funny now to remember how much my parents hated Reagan and be like, really? I mean, I wouldn't have voted for him, but compared to the shit that's happened since then.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I still feel like I owe W an apology. He's still a shit heel, but I feel like I owe an apology.
The first Bush people, I don't remember people being that freaked out about him. A little
and
bit.
And yet, he didn't even make it a second term.
Yeah. But Reagan and W, I remember both of those eras, people being very
upset. Well, I think people just thought of first Bush as Reagan continued, Reagan's third term.
But light.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, who cares?
Reagan,
and he didn't get a second term, so.
No. Well, no, I'm not. I'm like, I can think of some specific reasons why I bet he didn't, but I'm like, that's not what this show is meant to be right now. So, okay, draw a thing.
Draw a thing.
Win, lose, or draw a thing.
Do you remember when you read the autobiography of Craig Ferguson?
I listened to it, yes.
Oh, listen
I do,
to it.
Yes.
And
American on Purpose.
Yes, American on Purpose. And you said after you listened to that, you told me about it, and you said you were surprised, but after you listened to it, you felt a little bit proud to be American.
It filled me with some feelings of patriotism.
Right, which at the time you said was kind of unusual for you.
It was, and it's still very unusual.
Yeah.
I guess this is feeling a little way again. It's funny you say that because I've recently decided kind of I'm not really into Craig Ferguson anymore.
Hmm.
I mean, I still, I wish him well and I consider him a very nice man, but like his comedy, I mean, we went and saw him at the Englert a couple of years ago and stuff, and I'm like, it's not. I don't know if he's changed or if I've changed or both, but it's just not doing it for me anymore.
Well, this is from Craig, not Ferguson.
How do we know that? We don't know what Craig's last name. Well, I guess we know he's actually in the UK, so Ferguson's not. But Craig, if you're Craig Ferguson, tell us about it on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com.
From most to least evil, how do the regular and evil versions of Tony, William, the producer, and the cats rank?
Oh.
Most to least evil.
All right. Well.
Ezzy's the most.
No.
Yes, she is. Evil Ezzy is the most, isn't she?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so? Okay.
All right. So, no, top is Evil Tony.
He's the most evil.
The most evil.
Most at least, okay.
The second most evil, I'm pretty sure, is Good Tony.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. They have to be right next to each other.
Yeah, very close. Then I'd say Evil Producer.
Oh.
Evil Ezzy. Evil Addy, Evil Twiglet. Good Ezzy. Good Producer. No. Good Ezzy, Good Addy, Good Producer. No, I'll go back. Good Ezzy, Good Producer, Good Addy, Good Twiglet, Evil William, Good William.
Come on, really? You put me right at the bottom?
Well, okay, let me put this. Do you think Good William is the least evil out of that group?
I don't know. I don't...
Would you object if I ranked Good William as the least evil? Because your problem appears to be with me ranking Evil William as the second least evil.
No. My problem is, am I really less evil than your cats and your
Absolutely.
Wife?
Well, I'll put it this way. I'll argue with you about the cats, but I'm definitely not arguing with you about the wife. And I think she'll agree.
Okay, well,
it would be weird if she came out here and she was like, I'm less evil than William. I'd be like, did you bonk your head? How is that possible?
Okay, fine.
But I feel like, but I mean, and evil William is, I mean,
Penny.
The it's least it's evil plus pennies. Yeah, I mean, it's not even.
I get it. You're right. No, you're right. That's a good
ranking. I do think, like, it got weird in there because I feel like the goods didn't. At the top is evil me and good me, and the bottom is evil you and good you.
So it's all the stuff in the middle that's hard. Huh?
But the thing is, it's evil, 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 good, 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 good in the middle.
Mm.
But I don't know that they're in the same order.
Order, yeah, yeah. They weren't.
Because that's the thing. I feel like the disparities between an evil and a good vary differing amounts amongst those four. For you and me, for you it's pennies, and for me it's fear of jail, basically. Is the only real difference, but in between it like the variables are stronger.
That's probably a good song.
Evil producer and good producer is tricky. Like
there's quite a bit of distance between them. You like our two are right next to each other.
Well, yeah, no. All the evils as a whole are more evil than the goods of those four.
Yeah, yeah.
The good producer is better than all the evil cats.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just it's the ratio is not the same for all of them, so you have to switch it at a certain point.
That was very interesting watching you come up with that.
Yeah, the producer, I believe she's the one, the girl who had a little curl in the middle of her forehead. I believe was written about the producer.
Oh, okay.
When she was good, she was very, very good. She's bad. She was hoed. So I always remember because that's how Bugs Bunny said it.
Said what?
He would say there was a little girl. And she had. He almost does it Elmer Fudd style. Mm. Wide in the middle of her forehead. When she was good, she was very, very good. When she was bad, she was hoed. So I always have to say hoed. All right, give me the thing. This is from Jasmine.
Jazz.
What's the most interesting thing you've heard about or read about this week? Well, joke's on you. We haven't experienced minutes. This week yet.
Okay, then last week.
All right, then last week. Aretha Franklin died.
We watched a documentary about the 13 women who trained to be in the astronaut program back in the 60s before it was canceled by NASA.
Oh.
That was very interesting. Probably the most interesting thing I heard said, there were lots of interesting things. I don't want to downplay any of it, and I recommend it to anyone. It's on Netflix streaming. But one of the interesting things that was said was one of the training things was you went into a sensory deprivation tank.
Okay.
And the women could go into the tank and be in there for like 9 hours, but the men would like crack up within an hour.
Interesting.
And what the women said was, you know, it's like, this is like a vacation. This is great. You know, I'm just going to relax. But the men were like losing it because they just couldn't stand the fact that.
I have so many thoughts about what that might mean. And I don't feel like I'm comfortable saying any of them.
Really?
Yeah.
I just thought it was a cultural thing. Like for one thing.
Well, I think it's definitely a socially step. I think it was created via socialization.
Sure, there was a lot of information in the documentary about the women who they were getting tested to be astronauts, they were flying and everything, but they were also doing all the things most women in the 60s were doing at home, raising the kids, cleaning the house, cooking. So
like most astronauts.
Well, see, that's just it. These women were used to doing things constantly, and here you give them an opportunity to just relax in total silence and of course they're going to love it. But on the other side of it, the men
didn't have anybody to talk at
or to boss around or to, you know, whatever. Yeah. And these guys especially were real attention hounds. You know what I mean?
And there's all these theories of, well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to talk about that. I'm in trouble.
What do you mean?
I have a lot of theories based on a lot of things I've read, but I'm not sure that the things I read are not bullshit. So
I see. Well, I think it's just a matter of, The women appreciated a break, and the men didn't want a break from their life because their life was all, hey, people are taking pictures of me, people are talking to me, people are bringing me things I ask for. Why would you want to take a break from that? But, you know, when you're a woman, there was a lot of, they were doing some real work all the time, and they could appreciate the break. I thought that was interesting. That was my thought, my response to it, but you don't want to talk about what you're thinking. So.
But it reminds me of a thing. So, as I believe I mentioned before, Roald Dahl was a fucking lunatic.
Okay. Is this the most interesting thing you learned last week?
It was a couple of weeks ago, but okay. Yeah, I got him. Okay. So I'm still watching these Tales of the Unexplained.
Yeah, right.
The British thing that appears to be an analog to the Twilight Zone, but a lot more mundane in a lot of cases. And it starts, I've only gone through two seasons so far, and it started off as a series that was all dramatizations of Roald Dahl short stories.
Sure.
And he introduced them. Sitting in front of a fire, looking like a friggin' weirdo. As the series goes on, starting in season two, and more so in season three, and eventually apparently his intros drop out, but they start doing other people's stories as well, but he still introduces them.
Mm.
And in fact, you can tell from some of these, the title card says, Roald Dahl's Tales of the Unexplained, when it's one of his, and the other one's the Tales of the Unexplained, presented by Roald Dahl or whatever. Mm. And apparently, from what Wikipedia said, soon they'll leave him out of it. And no, there's no introduction anymore. But at this point, we're still in the middle. And so he's introducing this one that is not his.
Okay.
And this is, obviously I'm paraphrasing, but what I'm about to tell you is the sum total of the introduction of all the things he says. He says, I wonder how many British housewives would murder their husbands if they knew for certain they could get away with it. Here's a method that they could do without getting caught. He then proceeds to describe, in enough detail that I could do it, a method that I'm pretty sure, as a late 70s British housewife, you could pull off that would kill your husband and almost certainly would never draw, you would never get caught for it.
Hmm.
And like it would look like it was natural causes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then says, enjoy this story.
Enjoy this story. That sounds like...
That was the whole intro!
That sounds like an intro that Alfred Hitchcock...
Like,
for real.
Roald Dahl's a psych, but the thing is, it was real. Like, I could do this today. I do feel like it might be tricky. I mean, some of it had to do with your role as a housewife and all. It involved making something for dinner and things like that. But like, he literally told us how to get away with murder. Pretty foolproof,
huh?
And that was his whole intro to this story.
And yet, homicides probably didn't go up after that.
We don't know.
Probably not.
The big question is, how many deaths by food poisoning from oysters went up?
Well, the thing is, people generally don't.
No, I think
committing murder because they're afraid.
I think far fewer people than you might think actually want to kill their spouse.
Yes, exactly.
Well, especially nowadays, divorce is a thing.
Yeah, that's true.
It is only recently that I have really learned divorce is fine. Like, I've never had a lot of stigma attached. Like, I've never really looked down. Although I still do have this rule that you should only ever get married twice. Because, like, for whatever reason, the first time, you know, first time mistake, you weren't thinking, you were too young, you didn't really know what marriage was, whatever. Fine. The second time, if something goes tits up in that one, maybe marriage is not for you. And I'm not saying don't have relationships, don't have commitment. I'm just saying you might be bad at marriage, the specific institution. So I feel like that's, but no, I only, and again, an episode of Adam Ruins Everything helped with this, but not entirely, because part of the reason divorce is up now is because in the late 70s, thanks to then Governor Ronald Reagan, the concept of no-fault divorce appeared. Before the late 70s, by and large, you couldn't get divorced unless you could prove that somebody really sucked.
Yeah, right.
And so it's not that, like, oh, people aren't taking their marriage seriously. It's like, no, a lot of people who would have gotten divorced if they really had the option would have. And I know people whose grandparents have said, like, I've been with, it's usually the grandmother, says, I've been with your grandfather for 50 years, and I love him, and I'm not going anywhere till we die. But if divorce had been as easy and common as it is now, I probably would have divorced him about 30 years ago. And there's all sorts of reasons why a marriage might not work that don't have to do with adultery or abuse or somebody being a shit. And I find it surprising that I've only recently come to terms with this idea. Like I said, I've never begrudged anybody divorce. But in my head, I think there was a little judgment. In my head, I always had this thing of, if you got divorced, clearly you were doing marriage wrong, or one of you was clearly terrible or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no. Weirdly, people change. And even if you're living in the same house and being married, you don't necessarily change in the same or incompatible ways. Sorry, this is weird for you. I probably shouldn't
bring up this topic. Everything you just said about your general attitude toward divorce, I've also feel and have felt for as long as I can remember. Partly because I knew people whose parents probably should have gotten divorced. And not because one person was awful.
No, just because it didn't work, but divorce didn't happen.
Well, right. So. And I remember thinking at the time, just the fact that these two people aren't happy is enough. Good reason.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I felt that way even when I was a kid.
And what
up.
Kind of lives might they have had if they had been able to
sure.
uncouple and go and, do something else?
And a lot of times I knew the kids of these people and I knew that they would be fine. So, yeah, even when I was very young, my opinion of divorce was one person doesn't have to be terrible or whatever. It's just if you're two people who aren't happy living together, and you'd be happier doing something else. I guess I had that opinion because my dad, my dad wanted to do certain things with his life. He wanted to be a minister in particular.
Yeah.
And whenever I asked him why he didn't do the things he wanted to do in life, oh, well, I got married and then I had kids and so on and so forth. And I hated that. I hated the fact. I mean, I was glad that I existed and I loved him and I knew he didn't blame me or anything like that. That wasn't what...
No, but it is a weight on one.
Yeah, well, it was just... First of all, my opinion was he still could have done those things. He just needed to not feel so bad about maybe not making as much money because he wasn't working at a factory or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is we didn't have very much, even with him working at a factory. So if we'd had just a little bit less, I'm sure we still would have been okay, and he would have been happy, and that would have made us happy. You see what I'm saying? So,
I've never heard somebody say, we were poor enough, we could have been poorer.
Well, I'm still white. We still would have been middle class. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We had enough stuff that I'm sure we could have had less and been just as happy. Because we were happy because we were together as a family, and we still would have been that. And he would have been happier. You see what I'm saying? So because of that experience, I generally, as I was growing up, I put quite a premium on why stay in a situation you don't like.
Yeah.
And most of the time I saw people who were doing it and I tried to find out why they were doing it. It was because I have these obligations or whatever. And then I thought, those children of yours or spouse or other or parents, they don't want you sacrificing your happiness like that. So who are you really helping? You're not really helping anybody by doing that. So my opinion about divorce was pretty liberal when I was growing up. Now, that all that said, as you know, I'm divorced.
And you were married for quite a while.
10 years.
And I think maybe longer than you should have been.
Probably. I did. Even though, I had a pretty liberal view of divorce, My intention was to make choices in my life in such a manner as I would never be divorced myself. Not because I thought it was bad or judged anybody else, but that was just, of course, a personal goal of my life.
The producer is like that too. She always says, like, she doesn't believe in divorce. We could grow apart and whatever, but she's never going to let me get divorced.
I wasn't going to do that myself. So, and then when I'm the person who filed for divorce, I didn't want to do it. I hated doing it, and I've been divorced now for 20 years this year, and I'm sorry, it's going to be 20 years early next year, and
we're going to get you a cake.
I don't like being a divorced person. I mean, I like my life. I
definitely think you made the right call.
Yeah, I think I did too. My life immediately improved.
But it's sad that that had to happen.
Yeah, and it's something. Of course, what I'd sooner have happened is I wouldn't have gotten into a marriage that I shouldn't have gotten into in the first place.
Well, and that's the thing. There are marriages that are great, and then later they aren't, and then you get divorced. Yeah. From what I know of yours, as you say, maybe sort of never should have happened.
There wasn't anything that happened in the marriage that didn't happen before.
Yeah.
So it's like, should have known.
And that's why I give you the practice one.
Well, okay. All right. Fair enough.
And as I tell my boss, too, because my boss got divorced, and now my boss is married again, and I'm like, that's cool, and you're older, and you're wiser, and all this. If you don't do this one, maybe just shack up next time.
But, I mean, another thing is, even growing up as a kid, I didn't really understand marriage. Like, what's the point of it?
Well, and it's hard to understand until you're in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously, it's also extra hard to understand when you're a child.
Right.
But as much as you like so many things, having a job, being an adult in general, so many things is like, until you do, I'm sure having children is like that. Until you do it, it's not, you don't really get it.
Right. So.
And I mean, marriage has been exactly everything I didn't think it would be and nothing I thought it would be. And I love it, even though it's not what I thought I might love. But I love it differently, and I think better. Just the other day, somebody who's not like that, they showed me a picture of them with their girlfriend, and I was like, I'm sorry, but isn't your girlfriend black? And this was a white one. And he's like, that's a previous girlfriend. He's like, I've gone through a few. He's like, I'm being respectful about it, but I have had a sort of string of relationships. Mm. And he said, honestly, I'm thinking I may never really settle down. He said, everybody I know in a relationship is miserable, and I'm happy on my own, me and my cats and things like that. And I was like, that's fine. I know people like that.
Sure.
And if that's for you, that's great. I know people like that who, when I was younger, I was worried about them. And now I'm like, no, I actually think that's good for them. But then I was like, just to be clear, though, you know me, and I've been married 14 years, and I am ridiculously stupidly happy in my marriage and love every minute of it. And he just wrote back and said, fuck you. And I'm like, that's fair. I just wanted to make sure you knew
that's
not
fair.
Everybody is miserable.
Well, and again, I'm not miserable in my marriage at all.
I'm miserable in your marriage. I'm thinking of going home to mother.
It's been...
It's like you don't even look at me anymore. Did you even notice I got my hair cut?
It's the 20 years, the last 20 years of my life have been the best years of my life. And in some ways, they just keep getting better. And that's saying a lot because there's been some crappy things happened in my life for the last 20 years.
And there have been some cool things that happened in your earlier life.
That's right. But I think what makes my relationship with the person I'm with now so fantastic is because... It's what we have, the kind of relationship that I think if you're going to have a marriage or if you're going to have a partnership like this, it's exactly what you want, where you're both growing together. You know, you're not the same people you were 10 years ago. You're not the same people you were 5 years ago. You're helping each other improve.
You know all the stuff you know up to this point. Like, when I was 20, my best decision for a marriage would have been based on all the information I had at 20.
Right.
At 40, I realized how fucking little I knew at 20.
That's right, that's right.
And which theoretically means it's constantly going to be like
right.
that. Whatever relationship I may or may not be in at 60, unless something horrible happened or I fucked up really bad, I'm going to be like, this is the best because I have all of my accumulated wisdom
right.
and knowledge,
but,
and this is what I'm going for.
But we help one another be better people.
Yep.
And that's what we both want. We don't. And that's all we want. We don't have, neither one of us have any, some kind of specific laundry list of things we want from a spouse or a partner. There's only one thing, that we're each helping the other be a better person every single day, whatever that means. So then it doesn't matter how much I change or how much she changed or how different we are from 5 years ago. We're doing for each other the one thing that we want all the time. So nothing ever happens where we're like disappointed. I mean, my wife is a completely different person than she was 20 years ago. She's a completely different person than 10 years ago. But I would,
hair shorter.
I would marry her again, because I'm not with her because of this laundry list of qualities she has or laundry list of things I get from her. I'm with her because I feel like she's helping make me better, and I guess I feel like I'm helping make her better, and that's the best thing. And
fuck you.
I wouldn't trade it for anything.
All right, I can't even tell you how much time we are over.
Sorry.
But it is much. So if you think your marriage is better than ours, you're wrong. But tell us about it on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. And next week will be at the time you expect, but for us it'll be 2 weeks because I'm gonna go see Rift Tracks 2 and Crow. I'm so excited about it.
Yes, you are excited about it.
All right. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and each other. Copyright 1998, Jerry Springer.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.